Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our WNST programming brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. I'm looking forward to the new Chicken Palooza shirt. This is the 20, the vintage model, as it were. I'm doing my crab cake tour this summer, so I'm going to be stopping and gassing up and moving along and fried chickening up all summer as well with Rofa. I had that over the weekend for the draft. Really weird weekend, man. Like, the draft ran into the Derby. I remember when they were very, very separate entities back in the day when I used to sort of compete with this guy, but then we sort of ran together. Then he introduced me to a girl and I knew his dad and we were in the industry and we're Facebook friends. We went to derbies together and all that stuff. And lo and behold, in the middle of the pandemic, I'm watching the Kentucky Derby unfold on my social media. And my dear friend, Greg Scher, made it back to Churchill Downs and the Run for the Roses, and I was following his feet all weekend long in advance of the Preakness. Bob Baffert is coming on a little later on in the programming here today. So, Greg Scher, you are keeping great, great company. I saw you taking pictures with the Dwayne Lucas. I saw you doing wonderful things that made me very, very jelly over the weekend in Louisville because I know how much fun the Derby is. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have Greg Scher on because the ratings are going to go up when we have him on. What's up, brother? How are you, man? Good to see you.
I can't believe I made it back. This is a cameo. You had me on maybe 6 months ago.
No. It's not a cameo, man. Cameo, just you come in and out. I keep you like a half an hour, man. You know, well, you're the star amazing when you come here. So,
wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure people are really tuning in now. They're probably calling all their friends.
Oh, stop, man. You look, let's have some fun here with this whole thing. You're going to derbies and I'm watching on TV. You're living right. I mean, by the way, what was that Tom Brady outfit? He looked like a villain in a Bond movie. What the hell was that thing?
I don't know, man. He's incognito. You know, he didn't want anyone to be able to see him.
He looked like Top Hat.
He's 6'5". He's 6'7" with the hat.
Well, give me a little primer because I went to my first derby in 1996 or seven, I'd say. I then went like every year because it's the best sporting event in America. So let's start with that. And I'll say that to everybody for the next week because Baffert's going to come on. He knows how much everybody knows how much I love horse racing, except the people at the Maryland Jockey Club, where I haven't gotten a press release in 2 years. I got fired 3 years ago. I haven't gotten a press credential. I don't know anything about anything. They didn't even tell me they were running the race back in October. So from a publicity standpoint and what they're doing, the Canadian, I haven't met anybody, but I would just say this, you were at the track and I was like, man, I love that. I love the Preakness. I love the Derby. I love going to the track. I was dressed up on Saturday. I was watching you on my phone from Fells Point with my wife wearing a suit and looking nice. My wife dressed up because it was Derby Day and we wanted to get home to watch the race. We got home, rooted for Baffert. And I literally was watching you from the minute you landed in Louisville and thinking like, what a great experience it usually is. And I was thinking like, you look like you had a great time.
Always. So it's my 24th Derby. And this one was as good as any of them. Maybe the best experience I've had because the amount of people that were in there was about 70% less. My seats were right on the finish line. There wasn't a cloud in the sky Friday and Saturday. And the racing was incredible. And I just can't believe Baffert's horse was able to hang on. That horse once cost $1,000. Can you imagine?
How do you let Baffert go off 12-1 on Derby Day? Like, how do you just not throw 10 bucks at that just to say, you know what? Because when I saw the odds, because I had been out all day, my wife and I were drinking and eating and boozing and schmoozing and cruising and doing the city because we love ball. I mean, literally, I don't just talk like shit around here. I like walk the city. I walked 10 miles through the city Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday of last week. Like every day at 70 degrees, we go and we walk and we eat and we chew and we drink and we walk around and see dogs and run into Femi Ayabandejo in one corner and, you know, Jerry Gutierrez on the other. We just walk the neighborhoods. We got home like, and my wife was like 4:30. She's like, they're running the race soon. I'm like, no, that was last century. Last century was 437. Then it was 510. Then I Googled it, literally walking out of the Admiral's Cup. There's a plug for you, Alex Smith. And I was with Ed Lauer. And it was like 4:30. It was 5 o'clock. It was 5 because we watched Eddie play his last Yellow Ledbetter. And my wife's like, what time's the race? And I'm like, we're cool. We're cool. 6:55. Like I looked at it and I'm like, we got an hour and a half. Like we could stop at a meet. We got home about 6:15 and I put on the coverage as I always do. I was blown away that Baffert's horse was 12-1. I was just blown away. And I don't know anything about it. I don't follow it. I don't have to follow it. The people that own the industry here don't give a damn whether I follow it or not. So I wasn't like, I didn't have Dick Girardi on. And quite frankly, the horse racing people I have on this week and next week. So for me, I'll have all of my, Kenny Mayne will be on next week. Don Edwards will be on next week. Like all Lafitte will be, they'll all come on next week and talk the race. But I don't have them on before. So I don't really know, other than the NBC coverage, is how I literally learn about all the connections. And I love that part of it.
Well, you just need Baffert, right?
So you need it Saturday.
And most derbies, he's won 7 of them now. He's in a class of his own. He's also won 7 Preakness. He'll probably win an 8th coming up in a couple of Saturdays. It's just incredible what he's been able to accomplish. And as far as him going off at 12-1, he himself really downplayed the possibility of Medina Spirit winning the Kentucky Derby. He was a horse that he had questions about whether he could stamina-wise get there. And he's not a regally bred horse like these other Baffert horses that he's brought in.
And that's everything, right? Let's talk for the common person that may not know horse racing. It may not been to 24 Derbies and reads the form. I mean, you love horse racing, right? So when it comes to breeding in this race specifically, what makes these stakes races so special is that, I don't know, you sort of have to be born into it, right? For the most part.
For the most part, yeah. It is a science down to the T. When a horse gets on the track and is getting ready to spring from the gates, there's so much research in matching the father and the mother to that horse in terms of bloodlines and who's more likely to go a longer distance, a shorter distance, better on the turf, better on the synthetic surface, better on the dirt. So there's a lot that goes into trying to figure out. It's like a scientific potion, and out comes this horse. And so
it's different than guys and dolls, right? Than 60 years. I mean, the amount of information, you and I can talk about the things we love or hate about sports, but one of the things about baseball is if you're not into the science and the math, you're going to get lost because you're not going to understand anything that's going on moving forward. I would think horse racing is a little bit like that with DNA, right?
It's very similar. Yeah. So that by the time they put these potions together, you talk to Bob Baffert about it. I mean, I can't wait to listen to you talk to him, ask him what should I ask
Baffert? I need to get a real, seriously, I'm getting notes here. What would you want me to ask? What do you need to know from Baffert? Cause I want to take him in a different direction than crab cakes this time, even though I'm doing a crab cake tour, which you're invited to, by the way.
How surprised was he, truthfully, if he's to be candid? What chance did he think he had coming into this race compared to, let's say, American Pharoah or Justify, who won back-to-back triple crowns?
Do the odds on the board tell you what your chance really is? I mean, does the public's perception lead to what your perception is? And I guess in Baffert's case, he's forgotten more about this than anyone. To your point, he knew the breeding, right? And the breeding usually defines 80 or 90% of what you believe it to be, right? It's kind of like a radar map for weather.
I would go as far as to say that the Baffert factor was already in there, if not for the name Bob Baffert. If you had some generic trainer that nobody really knew about, that horse would probably be 30-1. But because of Baffert, because Johnny B rode him, the Hall of Fame jockey who...
And that's for the suckers that bet on him at 12-1. You felt like that horse should be 30. That's 30. How you felt about it.
Yeah, 30-1. Yeah.
So if you bet on that horse and won, you don't even feel great about it because you didn't feel like you got odds, right?
Well, anyone that bet on that horse bet on it just because of the name Bob Baffert. And I'll tell you another thing.
Well, that would have been a guy like me on Derby Day.
Right. So, you know, what's funny is us.
Bad value, right? Literally.
Yeah. Us folks who feel like we know something, we don't know shit. Honestly,
it's not bad value when you cash the ticket, though. That's what they Charlie Lamb used to tell me.
Yeah, no. Like we're sitting there, we got our glasses on, we're studying hard. We got our Twin Spires mask on. Yeah, you know, we're doing our thing, and we're spending hours up all night trying to handicap this, figure out pace scenarios, and we land on a horse other than Baffert's, and then you got 20,000 knuckleheads that come and say, "Oh, Bob Baffert, I got a bet on that one. He wins almost every year." What do you know? They're cashing, and I'm going home.
Well, the other part of this is the race itself. And look, man, I did seven or eight derbies, I guess, maybe. And I broadcast from there 2 years in a row back at the turn of the century when I was at Sporting News. Like, they flew me down. We broadcast live during the race day. Like, you know, I had wonderful experiences there in doing all that. And I haven't gone in a while. The last time we went, it rained like hell in the middle. We left before the race because we were going to get annihilated if we stayed. And then, you know, my wife got sick. And we haven't been back since then. And I don't want to say I don't know why. It's just we've been doing other things. Life's gotten in the way or whatever. But you made me want to go back. And the whole part of it and the pageantry of it. But the race itself is such a crapshoot because it's always too many horses. Horses that don't belong, sort of, kind of. I saw that two horse come out and sort of come like, you know, three over, right? So weird things happen. And the best horse almost never wins the Derby, right?
Well, and I think that's what happened here, is the best horse didn't win the Derby. The Cox horse, who finished fourth, is, you know, to me, central quality was the best horse, covered the most ground, finished closing fourth. But yeah, you're right. It just takes so much racing luck in a race like that. And what the benefit that Baffert had, and you can talk to him about this too, is he was the lone speed. There was no speed inside of him. So he knew coming out of that eight post that if Johnny could just get out, he'd most likely be in the lead. And then it's anybody's guess. That's all you want, is to have a chance with a speed horse to be in the lead at the Derby. The other thing is the horses on the West Coast did better over the weekend and tend to do better because at Santa Anita, the track, which is where Baffert is based, the track is a lot deeper. It's a lot thicker in sand.
Sandier, so kind of. Yeah.
So when horses come to the Kentucky Derby and they get their hooves on those on more of a flat surface, they're like a kid in the candy store. They can run all day and a lot faster on those surfaces. And I think a combination of those things, the post, the no speed, the west to east coast, being on the lead, all that played into the horse's luck for sure.
I don't know much about horses. I had a lot of fun at the Preakness back in the 80s. I don't remember much about Sunday Silence, but you know, it was a fun day with Ali Sheba, I'll say that. Greg Scher is here, longtime WBAL insider, and of course, has popped for a million years over at the 13. Now, you do money now, right? Like, you've had a great life and a great career doing this, right?
Life has been good, man. Life has been good. I'm at NFM Lending. I'm a partner in the company, and we're a top 25 lender in the country, and I'm able to marry kind of my love for broadcasting with my love for the business and making money. And it's been a great second life. I didn't crush it. I will never be found in the halls of the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, but I had fun doing that too. I've got some great memories.
You know, your dad worked with the greatest broadcaster of our lifetime. So like, that's kind of an amazing, that's kind of, I mean, come on, dude. You know, I mean, your family already hit that one, right?
It was pretty wild. My dad got vaccinated. I got vaccinated. We were in my house for the first time together about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. And my dad and my mom, I hear them on the iPad. This was like in early April. They're talking to someone. I hear a voice come in the room. I look over my dad's shoulder. He's just sitting there, you know, shooting the shit with Oprah. So I got a chance to say hi to her.
Old school.
Yeah, which is always cool. They've remained really good friends, and she's a legend. Who would have thought? I mean, talk about an incredible story. Just her journey from WJZ in the mid 70s to being one of the most well-known, influential people in the ever to live, right?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And her time in Baltimore and me remembering what's an Oprah and all that stuff and people are talking. I mean, part of my childhood for sure. I'll say this about Oprah. You know, I do this for a living and I've tried to get better at discussing things with people, and I'm interruptive and I'm storytelling and I'm, you know, I mean, all that nasty Nestor stuff, and that's fine because I want to have fun with this. This isn't fun for me. Believe me, there were times where this was not fun for me, Greg, and you know that. When I hung up my hat in 05, it was not fun dealing with racist phone calls and people that didn't know it combustible. I didn't want to sit and argue with people anymore. Right. Oprah's the best interviewer in the world. Right. And I consider myself an interviewer. So if you want to shoot threes, you watch Steph Curry and try to figure out how he does it. Right. Oprah's interview with the royal family, or the outpost of the royal family, a couple of weeks ago, I kept that. I DVR'd it. because I wanted to watch sort of the master at work, you know, literally. So when it comes down to the science of how to do it, if I had 20 minutes with Oprah in your dad's kitchen and could talk to her about anything other than a crab cake or this, and she gets her crab cakes from Fadley's, you know, like I get my sponsor, the whole deal. But I probably would talk to her about that skill set, about better listening, better intuition about what, how to get things out of people that maybe they would only say to you. And that a little bit of that skill set, psychology, right? Obviously, or being a part-time shrink as well, or around those people. But that's an amazing gift, right? And I guess most people wouldn't even think about that, but that's when I think of Oprah, I'm like, I want to watch her perform surgery.
Well, the only thing I can say is, to your defense, because you're a great interviewer, surgery is life and death, and oftentimes, and it's live. A lot of what she does is taped, so you don't really know how well she did. They're able to kind of tie it all together seamlessly to make it look like a Picasso, whereas oftentimes, Nestor, you're just going, right?
See, if I was doing comedy right now, I would edit something like Wayne's World right now and say, we don't edit. But I don't edit. So anyway.
That's what I mean. You're on the fly.
I'm on a rope, baby.
Yeah. You have a certain kind of energy, you know, that you...
It is what it is. I did Tommy Conwell last week, right, in Philadelphia. And I was 17 when I met Tommy in Hammer Jacks. I've been doing a lot of rock and roll, bringing some old rock and roll friends on. And the M3's coming. I can't wait to get a beer at Meriwether. You meet me at Meriwether for a beer? I mean, like, I that's going to be right. When I know the plague's over is I'm on the lawn at Meriwether having a beer, maybe Cheap Trick or something, maybe the M3 show, 4th of July. So I have people on. I have Tommy Conwell on. And I'm just being me, you know, what I am, right? And Tommy comes on and, you know, he's a little reluctant. He doesn't do a lot of like this stuff or whatever. And his fan page got a hold of up in Philadelphia. They hate me. They hated the host, right? They never heard of me. They want to hear Tommy, right? Tommy's on doing his thing or whatever. And they're like, man, the host, what a jackass. And I'm like, is there anything better than the people of Philadelphia hating me? Could I love anything more? I don't want them to like me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you've arrived. You basically have arrived in Philly.
I'm trending in South Philly in the 6-1.
Yeah, there's like the Liberty Bell and Nestor now.
Well, they don't know how much I love them and how I can't wait for my next cheesesteak up there and how many good days I had at the Spectrum and the Vet and all of that stuff. How many good days we have with sports? I was going to put the stadiums behind me and, you know, I can do that. Like I can switch because like the internet allows me to do that. And so if I want to go like Camden Yards behind me, do you watch baseball?
Not much anymore, but this is my favorite background.
I know you had that last time. I love
you know
that,
what? Dude. I mean, I'll be honest, Nestor. I've become a little jaded when I watch the NFL religiously. I love the NFL. I love the product. I love everything about it. You know, between the strikes and being in locker rooms and chasing guys down and, you know, waiting for sound bites while guys treat you like dog shit, I kind of took a lot. All that combined, I kind of lost a little bit of love for baseball. And, you know, I'm the guy that was listening to Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell under my pillow.
My last name's Aparicio, dude. You know, I've had, you know, I mean, that's how I got here. So yeah.
Here's a good one. You like this one?
Oh, look at that. You could sit between the legends. I love that. That's epic.
The legends, look at that.
I love your dad's do too. You know, I love Oprah's do. I mean, what year is that? 78, 79? Where's that? What
exactly.
Year?
Probably 78.
Was Oprah here when Harbor Place opened or was she gone by then?
I don't remember, man. It's been so long. At 50 years old, I can't even remember yesterday for the most part.
You did a good job at the Derby. I hope you had a few mint juleps. You had a great time. Give me a little lay of the land for horse racing. I mean, put your report. I mean, you already told me you don't watch baseball. You love football. We'll break down the draft. We'll have a good time with that. But give me a little reporter thing. Like if you were my reporter there this weekend, give me a vibe for it and what I'm missing out on and not going. Cause you did make me a little jealous. I guess I could drop a dime on Lane Gold or whoever's running it down there these days and tell them I'm coming down next year and try to figure out a room and come back without him. I would so love to make that one of the centerpieces of the good shit I'm getting back to next year. The stuff that was taken away from me.
I got you. Look, I can tell you my access. I've worked a long time to get the access that I have. I don't have credentials. Like when I'm in the paddock as they're saddling the horses before the Kentucky Derby. And I literally, if I make one wrong move, could be kicked in the face by a Derby contender as they're going out to the paddock.
Well, I'm watching your video and I'm like, this is your old man and this is your back. This is your reporter that you feel like you're in a place where a guy like me would like to watch where you are. And you gave me access and I'm appreciative. I mean, I text you right away and I brought you on the show because I'm like, well, this is what I'm missing. This is real life. And I'm so, I wasn't jealous or envy. I'm 52. I've been seven times. I'm blessed. I felt like, damn, Greg's there and I'm happy for you. You know what I mean? I know how much you love it and you brought me in on it. And I thought, and maybe you want to come back. You know what I mean? And maybe you want to do it again because it's one of the great things as a sportscaster, as a sports fan. I'm not a horse racing geek, but it's one of the great things I've done in my life and career. It's a top 100 thing I ever have done going to a Derby and people should go to the Derby.
You don't have to be a horse racing fan as you know, to love it. You love it. And you're not a big horse racing fan. So I mean, when they start playing My Kentucky Home and you get that 2 minutes of those horses rumbling down the stretch, there's just nothing like it. It's just the beauty, the pageantry, the mystique, the twin spires. When the weather's great, that is a great.
God, the weather was that was killing me too, dude. It was such a beautiful day. I commented on one of your videos. I'm like, those clouds aren't real. You know, like there's just no way it could be that beautiful, right? Like it was stunning.
I would like you to, if you liked it that much, if you can go to my Facebook page and share it with your audience so they can see what we're talking about.
Cool. I can do that.
Yeah. Easy enough. So I was in position when the jockeys came out and made their way down to the jockeys terrace, down to the paddock. And then I take the listeners on a journey down the steps into the paddock as they saddle the horses. And one cool thing maybe to talk to Bob about that's kind of off the beaten path is Dwayne Lucas did the riders up call. So that right there is, I'm standing there as the jockeys are coming out and they're leaving the jocks room, going down through the porch is what they call that. And then they make their way down the steps into the paddock. And then the next video, and these guys are psyched. I mean, look at this. This is game time right here. This is it. This is like the World Series, man. This is the whole enchilada. There's high-fiving people. Look how psyched they are. I mean, that's just the greatest. Javier gives me a fist bump. Javier Castellano, I consider him to be a buddy. You know, now they go down to the paddock and I'm not far behind them. In the next clip, I'm going down the steps. And
this was pretty cool. So here we go. Here's your next clip, right?
So here I am. So you got these police officers here. And now anybody with a credential on their neck is heading down. And to be honest, I'm late. I'm late to the party. You see the paddock in front of you. There are hundreds of people in there already. So I am definitely late to the party. If I was going to a baseball game right now, I'd be in the top of the seventh walking through the gate. You know,
I'm just proud of so many people wearing masks that I'm seeing right now because I know not everybody did or whatever. Are you vaccinated?
I'm vaccinated, but there was barely anyone wearing masks the whole day. So look, as I'm walking up here, I'm about to cross over and I'm like, oh shit, wait, those are Derby horses in front of me. I got to stop. So there's the 12, there's the 13, and they go, you know, the five horse, and it goes, you know, it goes through. And then I actually go into the paddock and, you know, kind of give you a play by play. That's the Pletcher horse there. It didn't run well at all.
Well, I mean, dude, you made me like want to be a part of this. So like, I, you know, and you have great pictures here with pretty girls and good friends. And, you know, I want to make an admission to you because we have a mutual friend, right? A couple summers ago. I don't know if I talked to you about this or not. A couple summers ago before COVID, my wife and I were staying at D Rose's place on the top side of New York City. And yep. Hootie and the Blowfish were playing up at SPAC in Saratoga. And we were there to see Barbara Streisand at the Garden, quite frankly, right? And we did that. And the next day we had a free day. I rented a car at the Newark airport and drove to up to Saratoga. Mark Bryan from Hootie gave me some tickets. My wife hadn't seen Hootie on the tour. And we went up and we spent 3 hours at Saratoga, dude. And it was a Saturday or a Sunday. It was in August, but it wasn't Travers. It was before or after, I don't remember, but it was in August. Dude, Saratoga, wow, right? Like that was like the real banana to me. And I felt like it made me want to go back to the Derby, but what it really makes me want to do, and this is where I want to get you involved in this, because I got to get you out of here on time in this segment, because I got a little back-to-back today. The Preakness and what the Preakness can be. When I'm watching your videos, yeah, I want to go to the Derby and drink mint julep. You know what I really want to do? I want to make the Preakness what it's always should have been. So that's a little bit of my jam at 52 to say, how can I be 72 if I can live that long, eat enough crab cakes, that we could take the day off on Friday and everybody wears pink and we make $1 trillion for cancer and the whole world wants to come here. And Tom Brady wants to dress like a Bond villain and come here. You know, like what we were maybe at various points trying to be on the road to. But I know you want that for the Preakness. I know you do.
Of course. Well, they're not going to get it where it's located now, I don't think. You know, I think the plans they had however many moons ago to build something downtown around the stadium complex would have been just great, right? Because that's where the restaurants are. That's where the hotels are. You've got a lot going on down there. I don't see that happening at Pimlico. I think our best chance is that it goes to Laurel one day and stays there. But I also wouldn't rule out that it could be at Santa Anita one day. Like I don't have any confidence right now that it's going to get worked out. I certainly don't want to see it at Pimlico. I just don't think it's the right area. I don't think it's, I think downtown would be great. I don't like the Laurel idea. I get the argument that people could come in from Washington, but who cares about them? I mean, people are like you said, you want everyone to want to kind of descend on here from the universe, right? You don't want this to be a local thing, which is pretty much.
Well, the issue for me is the industry itself, right? Like my friends at Greenmount Station, you know, have a you can go and bet and you can bet on phones now from anywhere. As you well know, there's the thing about it being relevant. And you know, and again, that would speak to this issue here that is an eternal issue where you built a palace, you know, literally, and, you know, the owner defecated upon paradise with the baseball team, as we've talked about, right? So when I see this pageantry around the Derby and I see all of that, I'm thinking, what's the industry, you know, what's the industry going to be in 10 or 20 years? And that's always the fault line that I think we go down with horse racing is we could make the Preakness bigger if the industry were bigger, but we're waiting for the cart to take the horse, I guess, in the wrong way.
Well, I think as the economy recovers, there's going to be more money on the sidelines for people to start to invest in horse racing. But I think what's really going to propel it is going to be revenue generated by the DraftKings of the world. So you can go on now to a lot of apps and there's more availability for people to gamble on horse races. And it's very addicting. And you can find out the outcome, unlike a football game where you got to wait for four quarters and you can feel like you have it in the bag. And then all of a sudden, you know, the snap goes over the quarterback's head into the end zone and you lose your bet. It's horse racing. It's a minute. It's a minute, 30 seconds. You get the outcome. You can move on with your day and your life. So I think that DraftKings, FanDuel, some other apps that will come behind it. I think it's going to make betting more in play here and put less emphasis on the at the track stuff and more emphasis on this whirlwind around it, off track betting, so to speak. Because, yeah, I mean, I bet from my phone. I have a TwinSpires app, and just about every bet I ever make is on this phone or on my computer. It's very easy to do. And I think ease of use and all of that is going to probably give the sport a breath. It's going to lift it up a little bit. Where it goes from there, I don't know.
By the way, that's what baseball thinks. You know, if you've watched baseball this year, it's like, oh, we're going to bet on it. I'm like, you got to care about it first. You hope to understand it, although I'm sophisticated enough to know about the way people vote in this country that knowing anything and betting on it probably has nothing to do with anything, right? But you would like to understand it better. I mean, I've been a baseball fan my whole life. I don't know how to bet on it. If I walked into a casino, I would know which pitcher I like, but I wouldn't know. And I don't even know which pitcher I like anymore because Splittorf isn't facing Morris tonight. You know, it's not Flanagan up against Steeb tonight, you know? So I don't even have that sort of aptitude to think about it. Horse racing, to your point, you can learn that part of it pretty quickly and read the form and compare X and Y and Z and say, I like the buyer speed. And I mean, you can learn horse racing, I think, quicker than you can learn gambling on baseball.
Well, I think I'm a real good test case for what you're talking about. I don't love baseball anymore like I used to, but I got into when I got my DraftKings account up and running, I got my casino app because it was passed in Virginia.
You're a degenerate, Cher.
I'm total degenerate.
Yep.
So I started to gamble on basketball games, and I didn't know. I don't know a lot about the NBA. I obviously know the good players and all that stuff, but it caused me to want to look and to understand the rosters, you know, is the team coming off the road, or you know, what are the trends? And I started looking at that.
So it got you interested.
I started to gain a real interest and understanding of what the NBA looks like today. And I think this is what I'm talking about. The fact that you have this ability to in-game bet now is going to push more people, the smart people. I mean, I can't imagine betting on something you have no clue about, but I guess maybe some people do.
People like
you
walk said, into, Vegas was built that way, dog. Come on.
I hear you, but if I'm going to bet on a game, I want to understand, you know, that's the easy stuff. Who's playing? Who's going up against who? You're like, that's like the simple stuff.
It's Silk. That horse has a pretty name.
Yeah, exactly. Well, some people do that, but I like to be a little more educated.
Well, right, because you're serious about it, which is why I'm bringing you on the show, to make fun of guys like me.
Yeah, well, you know, with wearing a shirt like that, it's hard not to make fun of guys.
Hey, man, Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. You know you love the fried chicken and the Western fries. Greg Scher is here. NFM Lending is the way to find him. If you know the legacy and legend of Greg, you'll know that at some point in next year, we'll have a crab cake together. I'm doing a crab cake tour. Straight up, I just want your straight answer. Oprah comes to town. And she doesn't pick the crab cake place, you pick it. Let's not say Oprah. Let's say, I don't know, who would be a big deal for you? Bono, Michael Jordan, the Pope? I don't know. Tell me who's the biggest celebrity you could find, and you take them and you pick them up at the airport. You're going to take them for a crab cake. Where are you taking them?
What if they're not a sponsor of yours?
No, it doesn't matter. Your favorite crab cake does not matter. No. It's non-denominational. Where you would take me for a crab cake.
I can tell you. I mostly ship my crab cakes. So this is a trick that I have when I'm recruiting people to come work for an organization. I always say to them, hey, do you like crab cakes? And of course, the answer every time is, who doesn't love crab cakes? I love them. I haven't had a good crab cake in a long time. So G&M makes it very easy to get on their website and order crab cakes and send them. Now, having said that, I don't enjoy their crab cakes personally. I think they're too garlicky. There's just something about the aftertaste that makes me want to vomit. But I will say Costas Inn is my go-to. So if I'm picking someone up at the airport and I want a crab cake.
Well, that's because you want to go to Dundalk. Because you grew up West and everybody wants to come to Dundalk. Everybody wants to be near the real spire, the Twin Towers. The real Twin Towers are in my neighborhood. I grew up in the shadow of East Point Mall and the Back River.
Where should I be going? Hey, let me change it up. The next five orders – whatever website you give me, I promise you, I'm going to order from there.
Fadley's and Costas. Fadley's and Costas are where you should be shipping your crab cakes. And here's where it gets crazy, because you'd say pick one or the other. They're different. If you get them both, you're going to love them both, because they're made with love, with local crab meat. But one's a little more mustardy and a little more celery based. That's going to be the Fadley's crab cake. And the other's a little bit more Old Bay-ish, but they're different. But they're delicious, and I don't really pick one or the other. I make them both angry, because I say to both of them, and this really angers them, I say, you know, I like a crab cake with pimento. And they look at me, and they're like, that's the way they do it at Timbuktu. That's the way they do it the other. Like, we don't put pimento in our crab cake. And then I say to them, well, I like my crab cakes fried. Whoa, 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 whoa. You don't fry a crab cake. It's a delicate creature. You broil a crab cake to keep the flavor there. I'm like, I'm from Dundalk. I fried. And this would go back to, not that I don't want your father on the screen or Oprah, but can you go back to Memorial Stadium? Can you give me the Memorial Stadium background here? And then I'm going to have to let you go, because I want to tell a story for
you. I have one question for you before we go. Have you ever had Pete on from Costas?
I have Pete on all the time. Pete's in my phone. Listen, here's the thing about Costas. Crab cake's awesome. Get the crab imperial, okay? It'll blow your mind. And that has pimento in it. That's why I like it. It has little peppers in it. And he's like, oh, you like the imperial? I'm like, yeah. So unbelievable. Get the spinach. They have the world's greatest cream spinach at Costas. I want to tell the story, because I got to go. I'm in my window, okay? Charles Davis picked the draft picks correctly for the Ravens, so he's in my window. One of the coolest crab cakes ever was right behind you, Memorial Stadium. They dropped it in the fryer next to the Leaning Tower of Pizza. And they served it on saltines. And I don't like mustard like French's mustard. But those crab cakes were like East Baltimore fried deliciousness. And they were probably made with like claw meat, you know, $2 a pound or whatever. So I'm not Gucci in my crab cake taste. I like them all. So you know what this is. In Maryland, you can't get a bad one. Outside of Maryland, you can't get a good one, right?
But you have great hair, and that's really all that matters.
I'll have you on next time. We'll talk some rock and roll. All right, brother?
All right, brother.
Beer's on me. I love you, Greg Scher. Greg Scher, NFM Lending. Fist bumps out. There he goes.